Spectacular Diagnostics.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. It is the off season. That means I dust down the podcast, which has been in cold storage for the last year. And I am very happy to welcome Mr. Keegan Swirbel of FAPL Cycling to our first guest spot of the 25-26 season. Keegan, welcome. How are you?
Man, it's funny. I swear a couple of years ago, this must have been a while back, but I was also the first guest of this podcast series. So.
2022.
Yeah, was it that late? I was going to say, it must have been years ago. But
and you were in the middle of a quest to try and find a pro team or find a team at that point. I think you hadn't been signed at that point.
I can't believe I'm still in the sport. You look back and you're like, wow, it is wild actually, this the like whole trajectory to still be here, you know.
It's crazy. Yeah. So I was going to start this slightly different and ask you to tell people about your backstory, and then I thought, ah, fuck that. So then I just started thinking about, you know, I've been following your career for a long time, and I was just thinking what pops into my head when I think of you and your career. And not just your career, because, you know, in previous interviews I've researched a bit about your backstory and stuff. So things which I think of when I think of you: parkour, skiing, champion, Lance Armstrong, BMC, injuries.
Well, unfortunately, many.
Tour of Utah.
Yeah.
Langkawi.
Yeah.
Ljubljana.
Oh, yeah.
COVID.
Kind of.
COVID.
Yeah. But COVID for sure, yeah.
Rally. Spain.
That's for sure.
FAPL.
And here we are.
Coaching. And last one I've got is YouTube.
Yeah, that's the new one. That's the new one. Ah, man, that's a good, that's a good summary of my pro, my God, yeah, I guess.
Is that your life?
Yeah. But, no, that's, yeah, nailed it right on the head. Those would be my kind of, like, you know, at the end of the year, you pick a word, or my mom gives me an ornament for like the theme of that year. Like, those would be the things right there. You nailed it right on the head.
Because I think some people, I mean, people know the stories. Well, some of the stories, you know, you're the kid who beat Lance Armstrong. Was that a mountain bike race?
Yeah, that was a mountain bike race.
What age were you?
Well, I was 16, a young guy.
So that obviously created a lot of headlines and stuff and followed you about for a while. The injuries, you know, totally ruined your time at BMC development team, and it, you know, could have ruined your whole career.
Yeah, I mean, try not to think of that. Definitely didn't help, that's for sure.
And
had a couple of those kind of injuries that just by far the worst time that they could have happened, but
2018, 2019, consecutive top tens, Tour of Utah. You know, I was looking back at the results today actually, and a certain João Almeida sitting in, I think, third or fourth in 2019 when you're sitting down seventh or eighth. And then Langkawi, you finish, was that second, third Langkawi?
Second there.
And then you sign up to come over to Europe and take the chance to go and sign for the Slovenian team, Ljubljana, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. And then COVID strikes and totally ruins that. And you know, the chance to come to Europe maybe is gone. The chance to go pro like that's maybe gone. And you've certainly had a lot of ups and downs in your time in the pro ranks, haven't you?
Totally. That's yeah, it hasn't been the smoothest of runs, that's for sure. I mean, I try not to think of that, but I'm still here. So it's,
oh, yeah. People talk about, what is it called, the slick sliding doors moments?
Right, yeah, I mean,
you've had probably more than most.
I have, but I mean, I don't know why that is, really. I just, it's just, I mean, like I say, I just, I have a tendency to overdo things. I like to think some of those things that happened to me were just straight up bad luck. Like, but yeah, that is what it is. And shit happens, like I always say.
It does happen, and it turns you into the person you are today, I suppose, you know. And then obviously we said there, you know, 3 years ago you come on this podcast, your time at Rally's done, and you're not getting offered a new deal, and you didn't have a contract, and after that you end up racing for a Spanish club team at the start of 2023, and a couple of months later you then get signed by FAPL, and you've been there ever since. What, for those that don't know, Portuguese continental team, good solid team, good solid calendar. Obviously, you get to race the mythical Volta Portugal. What's the team like? I was going to say, as an outsider, you've been there a few years now, so not an outsider.
Yeah, no, it's a really great team, to be honest. Like, not to shit on Rally in any way, but it structure wise, FAPL rallies exactly what we had on Rally. Like, it really, really, our boss José Acevedo, he does a fantastic job with the money that we have. And I mean, like I say, we've got a good program. It's a bit kind of off the radar of mainstream cycling because we do a lot of races that are kind of national Portugal style races. But yeah, it's a great setup on FAPL. I can't say I would dare to ride on any other team in Portugal, honestly. But I'm lucky that I've had that chance. And I mean, it looks like next year we're actually going to almost ride exclusively an international calendar. So for me, that's super exciting. So
That's really cool.
yeah.
And I noticed you've signed Jesus David Peña, who, my God, I remember winning a stage of Tour of Slovenia. And he was absolutely sensational a couple of years ago.
He's become one of my buddies in the Peloton for sure. He's a hell of a talent. It's wild. I mean, like, just talking about these poor Colombians, they're kind of in now, from what I see, getting into a bit of a similar situation as these Portuguese riders, in the sense that they're just a little bit like banned from. I mean, you remember that 5, 6, 8 years ago, they were signing every Colombian just because of their passport. You know, a Colombian, sign him up. And now it's just the opposite. Like, they really are trying to, for whatever reason, they're not going near those guys. And then we got a guy like him who's like just banging out results, and he doesn't get re-signed, bangs out results all year this year, and still, like, it's wild.
I
He's really good.
always look at, if you're a sprinter, you seem to get so many opportunities.
Yeah.
Right? You see guys getting, even today, like Pascal Ackermann signs for Jayco, and teams are so willing to sign a sprinter, so willing to, even if they haven't had a result in 5 years. And for me, it always seems the opposite way around with climbers.
Probably. I agree. Yeah.
And I don't
I
have no idea why.
mean, like I said, I guess, although, man, these sprinters are getting, it's going to get worse for them over there. It's just like I said, like, cycling's changing so much. There's just less of these sprint opportunities, but still, they have, like I said, much more than a climber does for sure. But who knows why? I guess it's the Pogacar effect that puts so many mountains in these. Yeah, it's just kind of the same people winning all the bike races nowadays, as we obviously see.
And you
Yeah.
mentioned about the national races, and this season in particular, Pro Cycling Stats they've started putting the national results on the
Yeah.
database as well, which is really cool because it allows people to keep up to date with that tier of cycling, which is something which has kind of remained hidden for many, many years.
Oh.
So it's cool to kind of check up on your results and see
Yeah.
if you've done well
Yeah.
in that race. I mean, talking about this season in particular, the team raced Gran Camino,
Yeah.
and you were 20th in the Queen stage, which was a really tough day out. Derek G was laying down some big watts, but the guy Chamil managed to beat him in the end, which was a huge surprise. When you rock up at these races with the bigger teams, obviously there's an opportunity to show who you
Yeah.
are and you're with. How hard is it to go up against, Derek G, or because Derek G's a
Yeah.
top 10 GC rider.
Well, I mean, obviously they're far ahead of us. I think. I mean, I ended up kind of doing the tour of Luxembourg this year at the end of the year, and I was in far better shape actually. And I was up there on the Queen stage with those guys, and that kind of gave me a bit of a confidence. But looking back towards Gran Camino, I wasn't in my best shape, to be honest. So we kind of got my doors blown off in that race. Unfortunately, kind of one of the few races of the year that had some stages that suited me really to the ground, well, not to the ground, but that suited me well as like kind of a real like climber type. But yeah, I didn't really prepare how I should have in hindsight leading into that block. And I just they smashed us. Those guys come in with a bunch of race days in the legs and we don't. So I kind of feel like I made a bit of a mistake with my training leading into that. And like I said, 20th on that stage, but I know I have way more in me than what that result actually shows. So that'll be motivation for next year, I guess.
So these guys, obviously, winter, they go training camp in December for 2, 3 weeks. They go, so they, what do they normally do? They do a team meetup November, which is usually a party, and then December training camp, 2, 3 weeks, potentially January training camp, early February training camp for some down in the Algarve, and then into these races. I mean, compare that setup to what you have. So do you guys do you do training camps? Do you do local training camps, or is it are you left with your own kind of training program?
Yeah, we'll do a training camp, but to be honest, and this is like I say, this is something we got to change as Portuguese cycling as a whole, is we're just a bit, I mean, like friends, all right. So in my case, I kind of just do my own training because I'm my own coach. I enjoy that. You see my videos and stuff. I kind of enjoy that. So it's fun for me at this point in my career to do my own coaching, whatever, learning, etc. for my future coaching clients, but the Portuguese guys are a little bit behind in the sense of like following the kind of new training physio or ideas that they have in these bigger teams. Obviously, they have all the new training science and all the latest kind of studies and what have you, and they're totally applying those. And boy, can you see it? Like these guys now, they know how to just reach such a high level so early on in the season through training. Whereas in Portuguese mentality, we're a bit kind of more of this old school, like you race into form, and then if you go and you do a big race like that as your second race of the year or even your first race of the year, you're just going to get your doors blown off. So yeah, it's tricky to time it well, but yeah, we got to kind of take a bit of a page from what these other teams are doing training wise and maybe do a bit more of those training camps, do a bit more of the kind of race specific type efforts, and then maybe we'd have a better chance to actually show our level. Because by the end of the season, I think we have a good level. The Portuguese guys, we've caught up to these other people when we have the race days, etc. And then we can kind of go with them, So by that time, it's too late.
Because a lot of the pros who I know, world tour level, will often say that training is just as good as racing, which is so changed to even maybe 5 years ago. Like this idea of a almost constant peak
Yeah.
that Taddy's brought in, or that is so alien to what has always gone in the past. Cyclists would rock up in February, March, and just gradually build towards whatever that goal might be for the season. And now you look at not just like the best in the world, but you look at the top 10, the top 20, they are at that level almost from January to November, which is
Yeah.
insane.
It's wild. It's cool. I mean, like you see, I don't know how into the whole the training science stuff you would be, but I mean, it is the few guys that we do have available there, like power data and their training. It's really interesting to see how they're trending now. And like I say, just a lot more intensity kind of all year round. And I mean, obviously that's going to help them just enter the season with a much higher level, and it just makes sense. They know how to manage that fatigue so well nowadays that they never have that period where they're like smashed or they need to take a rest and rebuild. They're just always just up there floating, like you said, just year-long peak. It's wild.
Yeah.
Really.
And even the difference from like a lower world tour to a higher world tour, because if you look at someone like Christoph Laporte, who goes from Cofidis, who is, and he was a really good cyclist at Cofidis, he had some really good results. And he goes to Jumbo, he goes to Visma, and the percentage improvement on him is enormous. And it's from how they train, it's from how they eat, it's the nutrition advice, it's But the markup in him and other people like him is absolutely huge.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, for me, that's the coolest thing. And that's kind of the whole reason why I still am in the sport is because it's just such a like wild concept to me that a case like that, you know, here's a guy that you can't say, like, oh, yeah, I mean, Laporte does his first grand tour and it changed him as a rider. Like, here's a guy that's done 10 grand tours deep into his career. And with some tweaks to his training, nutrition, etc., he's able to massively level up. Like that's for me, that's just mind-blowing and cool, like on a science level and training level. And I just, yeah, I would love to do that to myself. And that's kind of like I say, why I'm in the sport. I want to try that and as an experiment. I kind of gotten away from the whole like world tour dream, whatever. If that ever stars aligned and that ever happened to me on my 30 years old, very unlikely, but that'd be sweet. But now it's just about kind of doing those experiments and seeing that it's just super cool, honestly. It really
Because
is.
one of your recent YouTube videos is you follow the UAE training block for 3 days. Brandon McNulty was training before Tour de Luxembourg, wasn't it? You know, is it a surprise that you achieve a very good result in the Tour de Luxembourg after following that program?
No, I did. I mean, like, that's what I mean. Like, I feel if I literally just did exactly what he does, I copied Brandon McNulty's training for a few days. Like, I don't know if you mentioned that already, but you probably did. Anyway, I feel like if I literally copied that year round, I'd probably be really good. Because, like, it's the training that that guy does is so logical, it's so simple. But like, boy, just it is crazy, and I mean it's hard. I those couple of sessions that I did were significantly harder than I normally train. That's for sure. And I mean, obviously, doing those 3 days wasn't the differentiator in me doing a decent ride in Luxembourg. But it does make you can it does make you think like, wow, okay, maybe I need to try a bit harder or like. You do some of those workouts that McNulty is doing, and like, holy cow, it's intense. You know, it's a lot of hard work out there in these training. And then you couple that with doing all these race days, and you're like, oh shit, okay. No wonder these guys are so good. That's, yeah, it's wild.
So you mentioned you're your own coach. You coach other people as well. In terms of your own training, where do you seek guidance, advice, inspiration? You know, you must have tried so many different things that maybe have worked and maybe have not worked. You know, where do you get that kind of inspiration for your own kind of training program?
Yeah, I guess really it wasn't until kind of this summer. Well, so I had another knee injury this summer, actually, that took me out right before our big kind of race block with the Volta and whatnot. It wasn't until kind of after I came back from that that I really started kind of looking and trying to think about my training on a more like science level. Before, to be honest, like, not to say that I was lazy or just I just like I kind of knew the level that I needed to be in Portugal, and I just didn't really see a reason to kind of try harder. So I just biked. Honestly, I just biked. Like, I love biking. I know I like to go uphill, whatever. So I didn't really have a scientific training plan. And then after that summer, I don't know what kind of started it, but I just wanted to kind of think through what I was doing a bit more and make sure that it actually was logical and it had sense. And that's where I kind of started almost just copying McNulty's training. And yeah, I've tried a lot of stuff, but I definitely learned a lot those last few months. I tell you what, I really felt like I ended the season with like, wow, that's actually my highest level for sure. Late October, I was like, geez, that's cool. But so we'll see. Maybe I can try some of that stuff next year. Make some more videos.
That leads me on to the content section
Yeah.
as well. So where do you come up with the ideas? What is the sort of, I know why I do what I do. I do what I do in terms of these podcasts because this is the type of stuff I think I would like to watch on
Right.
YouTube. That's why I do it.
Yeah.
What does it for you? Like why do you make certain videos?
Yeah. S similar, to be honest. I mean, like I said, I really am passionate about the whole coaching, sports science theme, but I'm learning about it on my own, and I'm learning, like, I'm not studying it. I don't have a degree in sports science. I'm learning it through doing crazy experiments and testing it out on myself because I have those and I have nothing to gain. Like, I'm a freaking Portugal biker, so like, whatever. If I smash myself or ruin an experiment and I go and I am bad in a Portugal race, I kind of don't care at this point in my career. So I use that to basically learn and experiment and learn for my hopefully future possibly coaching opportunities, jobs. Like I say, it's my passion really. So, and yeah, along the same lines as you, like I kind of see possibly a lot of coaching related content on YouTube that's a bit more dry, a bit more science based, a bit more kind of guy sitting in their home doing a more scientific discussion, whereas I wanted to make it more like, all right, like outside, more movement, more. I'm just very animated as a person, so I kind of want to do it that is a bit more exciting. Like, not many people are going to want to hear about certain crazy scientific terms on the whiteboard behind them, and maybe if I can make it a little bit more spicy and more entertaining, I don't know, something that more of an audience would like, we'll see. That said, I mean, some people are like, calm the fuck down, dude. Like, you are just like way over the top. But I mean, that's how I am. So,
Nah,
yeah.
the things that I've picked up that I like. So I loved the bit you talked about, and it's just like a tiny bit of a video, right? So you talk about how you're not going to go and spend so many euros on a fancy gel.
Yeah.
You're going to go and you're going to grab a pack of whatever from the local shop, and that's what you're using as energy. And for the first time, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like,
Yeah.
you're not getting crates of gels from your team. You're having to buy this stuff yourself. And I was like, all right, okay, I like that. And then you did one about food and about cooking, and about, I think you're talking about olive oil, and if you heat it up, you lose the nutrients, and that became a talking point in my house as well.
Yeah.
But I like the little bits that just pop up naturally almost in the videos.
Really? Well, thank you. Thank you.
Cool. So, like, video-wise, I mean, do you run out of ideas? Like, there's only so many ideas, surely.
Yeah, that's kind of, I've been worrying about that too, but I don't know, when I go out there biking, I usually ride alone and my brain just works, it just works on double time. You know the sensation when you're out there running, doing your exercise, and your brain is just firing off ideas like nothing else. And I just think of ideas, write them on my phone while I'm out there riding. I got like a big old list of like video ideas that I might make someday. So for now, I'm good. For now, I've got some ideas still left in the reserve.
So
Yeah.
I see you doing three things, right? So you're a cyclist, you're a coach, and you're doing
Yeah.
YouTube. Can you rank them in an order? Like, do you enjoy one over the other? Obviously, your YouTube is about cycling, so everything's really closely linked. Does one give you more
Yeah.
than another?
That's funny. I mean, like, they're all for each other. Like, I love my own personal cycling because, like, I kind of was saying, like, I like to do these experiments, learn about stuff through my own tests, and then that goes to YouTube, and then also, like, that. What I learn by, researching certain things to make a YouTube video, I then pass to my coaching client. So it's all like quite intertwined, you know? It would be hard to rate them. I do. I mean, for sure that my own personal cycling right now is going to be my favorite. I love riding my bike so much and love being out there. But that said, like, I love preparing to try and get my body to its top level. Which is like where the science and that stuff comes in. I don't know if I would be someone that just like goes out and just bikes just because I love biking so much. I more so love biking because I love training in the process, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So you mentioned age a little bit earlier. You've hit the big 3-0.
Yeah.
Still a pup and when compared to some other people in this room. How long do you see yourself still being a professional cyclist? Is that something you've thought about?
Not really. Honestly, I mean, like I said, this summer when I had the knee injury, I was fully quit. Like I'd quit. I told everyone I was quitting. I was doing this, and it's just very much like I don't want to really think about the future that much. I'm totally aware that like I'm not gonna be a pro biker for much longer. Totally aware I'm not making that much money doing this, and that like someday it's gonna end relatively soon. But I don't know. I try not to think that much in the future about anything because just I see so many things change. I see so many outside of cycling, you know how it is. Like, it's just kind of why even waste energy thinking about something when a million things can change tomorrow? Like, so I take it really year by year. If I get a contract, if I want to continue, right? It's not even if I get a contract. If I'm still motivated to do it, maybe I continue, maybe I not. We'll see. I'm really, I'm lucky. I have a great girlfriend. I don't have any kids. I don't have any real responsibilities. So I'm just kind of not living in a fantasy world, but kind of delaying the real world for a bit. I'm still having fun, so I'm just doing
That's what I was
it.
gonna say. Not quite living in the real world because
Yeah.
you get to do what a lot of people would see as a dream job.
Exactly.
You seem
So.
really well ingrained with Spain.
Big time.
I assume you are fluent Spanish, yeah?
Now I am. Definitely now I am. Yeah. Yeah.
Good at reading Spanish as well, or you the full package? I know some guys are better at speaking than they are at reading.
No. I went absolutely bonkers nuts with my Spanish studies for I mean, that's sick. I mean, I wanted to do it for years. You speak Spanish too, don't you?
All like tiny, like holiday Spanish.
Okay. Anyway, I
So that's the one. The one regret, and what I tell my own children, the one regret I have is I don't speak another language well.
It is really cool, I will say. And like I said, I always wanted to do it, but I also am someone that's pretty all or nothing with the stuff that I do in this life. And so it took me many years to kind of get to the place where I was like, fuck yeah, we're going all in. But once I got there, it was just crazy. Like, I literally would be like, this was probably 2 years where I was so obsessed with the whole Spanish project that, I couldn't hang out with my friends on a Friday night because I had to study Spanish type obsession. Like, it was the only thing that I could think about for 2 years. Every single minute when I'm out biking, I got the podcasts in and I'm writing down words. Like, it was crazy. But anyway, I really wanted to try and master it, and I really, really studied it again for my, just did it on my own. Like, I kind of came across this this theory again. Like, I wanted to test it out. It's called comprehensible input. And the idea is basically, I'm not like, I never took any classes, but that the theory of comprehensible input is to just bombard your brain with mostly listening input and train like the same way that you and I learned English when we were kids, just by listening, our body just absorbs it. And I was like, you know what? I want to fucking put that to the test and see if I can do it with my 26-year-old brain. So I just did it. I just literally all day, 10 hours a day, I got the podcasts in. And 2 years later, I was momming. And here I am. Like, I definitely, I've got it dialed now, for sure. But it wasn't easy, that's for sure. It was not easy.
What's
But.
where's better, Spain or America?
I know, Spain. Oh man, I will never leave Spain, that's for sure.
Favorite part of Spain?
Man, every part. It's just my favorite. Like,
I love the South. I love Andalusia. That's.
I love it down there as well. I mean, I love it up here in Catalonia as well. It's just crazy. Like Spain's such a diverse country. It really is super unique. Like, we got the high mountains. We've got the extreme green up in the Basque Country up north, anywhere up north. Got the real ocean, like on in Galicia and over there. And then we've got the south, like you said. It's wild. The desert, the Mediterranean. There's just everything here. It's amazing for me.
That's cool. It's really definitely my favorite country in the world.
Yeah, you and me both, that's for sure.
Now, looking at 2026, you mentioned it there. You've got another year at FAPL. You're still going to be doing the YouTube stuff. You've still got ideas. You said you live in the moment, don't like to look ahead, but are you one of these people that writes down goals every year, or are you not that type of person?
No, I won't write down goals. I will say that I'm writing a bit of a kind of new motivation. Like I said, I mean, years ago, back in those tour of Utah days, I was hungry. I was hungry. I wanted to try and make it. I wanted to do the Tour de France someday. And I was going all in. Was I doing it right? No. But I was all in. And then kind of these last few years when I was in Portugal, I was a bit, like I said, I wouldn't say I gave up, but I was a bit just being like, you know, this is kind of, I don't see a real out from here. I just wasn't really trying my hardest. But after kind of Luxembourg, I mean, like, again, like, it's not like I fucking won the race or anything, but I did that one stage and I was like, you know what? Maybe I could. I can. I just want to go back. That's my goal. One more time in my career to kind of go all in and hopefully it goes well and to kind of feel that feeling that I felt after I did a good stage in Tour Utah. You know, like I did a good stage, that queen stage of the Tour Utah, and like looking back and thinking, like, wow, like, all those crazy, stupid things that I was doing before, like, they paid off. And that's a level of satisfaction that just, well, it hits, you know, it hits hard. I want to feel that again once more in my career. Doesn't matter the race. I just want to feel like, wow, okay, that's my peak. That's the peak of Keegan Froebel right there. That's what I want to see.
Because that Luxembourg stage, I remember I knew you were racing. I was
Yeah.
like, oh, keep an eye out, see if I can see Keegan. And then Queen stage, and then you got off the front in a nice group, and then the other guys come back to you on that ridiculously steep climb, and I'm watching you and I'm thinking, go on, Keegan, come on. And yeah, you stayed with them when it kicked off, and
Yeah.
you've got like Carapaz, McNulty, Healy was jumping about like mad, you know. It was proper top level cyclists.
Yeah.
It must have given you so much satisfaction. As you said, you didn't win the race,
Yeah.
but to have that moment and be like, no, I'm not getting dropped.
No,
Must
it was great, honestly.
oh.
I probably would have quit the sport. I probably wouldn't have gone back and raced next year had it not been for just like being that little bit of a surprise. Like, okay, like maybe you're like not as bad as you think. Not that I think I'm bad. It's just like, I mean, you go into a race like that, and after I hadn't raced for 4 months, and I'm like, oh my God, like, okay, let's like try and finish this race. Like, and then to be up there, I was like, oh man, okay, that gives me a bit of hope. Like, man, if I really, 'cause like I say, I know there's a lot of low hanging fruit these last few years that I just haven't been doing just because I don't have the desire. I didn't have the motivation. The stuff that I don't want to do. I'm talking, these World Tour guys, they're working for it. Like I saw, you probably saw that article. I forget who it was. He retired from INEOS this year. Like, yeah, like they had him doing the bike session, and then he gets back and he's got to do a gym session, and then the third session of the day is like the heat training session. And he's like, yeah, like I'm working all day. And that's what these guys are doing nowadays. Like they are earning their paycheck a lot more than the cyclist was 15 years ago. And I feel like I can do that. And so, I mean, we'll see. I'd like to try and just see if I can get to a higher level. Make a YouTube video about it and then retire.
There you go. It's funny. I speak to other guys who, really top class riders, domestics at world tour level, and they are almost demoralized at how poor they think they are comparatively to this ridiculous level. We touched on it at the start. This peak throughout the whole season, and they're looking at it and they're getting spat on the first climb. And they're working like dogs every day of the week. And the difference in level just now seems so high.
As well, I mean, it is like, and those, like you said, those are guys making solid paychecks for doing their job, and they're so fucking good, and they're just getting blown out of the water by these guys. It really, that's how. I mean, I think we're all watching the best cyclist ever. That's for sure. With Pogacar, holy cow, man, it's pretty wild.
That's crazy. I mean, even looking at other sports, he's so far ahead of second best. Like, I struggle to think. Obviously, in tennis, sometimes we've had like Sampras dominating for a few years. It's kind of like that. It's Djokovic. He's so far ahead of everybody else. I mean, a lot of people now are talking about, bad for the sport. It's maybe bad for viewing because if you're like me and you love the sport, you're watching Lombardia and you're like, right, okay, 50K to go, I'll turn it off now. And it's not his fault he's so fucking good.
I mean,
Fans' point of view, we want to see Andy Schleck versus Contador. We want to see close fights and it's not.
yeah, no, it is a bit of a bummer that Vingegaard just, I mean, God, like, another guy just did so good, but like, man, he just isn't, he's not close to Pogacar. It just is wild how he's pulled away.
Yeah, in 2 years.
I don't think anyone really saw that coming, actually. Like, I certainly didn't. No way. But
Absolutely not. And now, like, in some ways, I think Vingegaard is more like that old school.
I
I'll
think so.
hit my peak, and then like his attitude. I think it was the Euros, and like he stepped off his bike after about 50K, and he's just he gives off that I don't give a shit.
Yeah, a
And
little bit.
I quite respect him for that. But for like everybody apart from Taddy, it must be so hard mentally to go in thinking, try to convince yourself you're going to win or you can win.
Yeah.
We all know you're not going to win.
Yeah, I mean, like, especially the way those UAE guys as a team race, like, their tactic is always the same. Like they just ride hard the whole day. Like, my God, in Luxembourg, it was wild. That's when they're defending the jersey, like their tactic isn't, I mean, geez, like 10 years, 5 years ago, I remember, like, you do some races where the break goes and you just ride pretty chilled for a while. It's never like that when these UAE guys are in charge. It's the break goes 5 minutes, the leader piece, and it's bam, like right back to it, just grinding that pace around. So it's like very predictable. And if you're a guy like Pogacar and you have those legs, like you're just literally gonna always win. There's no way to beat him, unfortunately. Like you say, like it's bad for the viewership, but it is what it is.
Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
2026.
Yeah.
Okay, Keegan, so you're continuing on next year. We've got the motivation.
Yep.
We're going all in one more time and then seeing where it takes you. Is that it?
That's basically it. Like I say, it would be cool to have another kind of that like tour Utah moment where I just felt like, I don't know. I mean, like I say, like you make those extra sacrifices for that certain race that's really special. And then if it goes well, if you can look back, oh, just it's such a good feeling. I want to feel that. That's what I'm going for.
Well, I'll go to the accompanying YouTube video that
Oh,
that moment.
definitely going to be accompanied by a YouTube video. No doubt about that.
Well, Keegan, thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely, man. It's going to be
Have
good. To
a season, hopefully, when it comes.
Thanks, brother. Thank you.
Say accumulate papes, fresh razor blade for the gig, we're moving weight to win the weight. Wise ways, precise aim. Trying to rhyme like this might leave your mind strained. The times change, flight delay, light haze. Thoughts looking like they foundation might cave. The look in my eyes resemble the ice age. The clocks of the crowd, the rent park is way park waves. Like moves on, move raw. Involuntarily eat your full paw. Feel like a painter who can't do wrong. Fallatio from lazy do fall to Paul Kane. But brought a broad brain with it all game. You snow change, you do like a solid grand product 10. We push it in the hallway, on guard always.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, Nag Daddy. Oh, yeah. I feel like. Should be fossilized in amber. Wise commander, fuck all the lies and slanders. When it come to ill niggas, you sound like the standard. Feathers and quillers, I bite the standards. Cobra, cuanto tu me cobra. Tengo dinero, pero no me sobra. You want the flake of the boulder, then I'm introducing the baking soda. Eighth of the Yoda Palace, is with gold, so blowing hate in circles in Minnesota. Buffaloes in their barrio. Drama with disco, King Mario. Shotty blow in the hands of the Sicario. I reload the pill. Off without watching his body fall. Pull the ass of the mighty gone. Rainbow headband, Sylvester Stallone, skull and bone, herringbone, wishbone. Went out for the trophy and brought the shit home. Blowing loud endo. Chop the rock to 16 bit Super Nintendo. The cream rises in a crescendo, nigga. Well, now your daddy kicking at. You know what I mean? Jump off the motherfucking cliff live out the district, shit, my nigga. Word. Woo!